Hey, everybody. Welcome to a very special Friday filibuster. It's not a Friday filibuster. It's an objection. that would have been a special Friday filibuster. Okay. Objection. For real. For reals now, yo. It is Objection. We're the worldwide leaders of Katrina Holery. I am David Johnson, joined by Dan Mancini.
Hello there.
And a host of luminaries, starting with Mac McIntyre.
I'm very special.
Adam Arsenal.
How's it going?
And Mike Staley.
I'm feeling very luminescent.
So now, this was originally Dan and I were going to talk about what we teased last week, one of our favorite quote-unquote actors, I guess. But we're going to table that because how often do you get five of us together to burn through bandwidth? So we decided to bring on a whole panel of experts and just go full-on objection with this. Right, Dan?
Right, but that show will be coming, and it is about one of the greatest thespians ever. So, you know, I just want to tease that up.
Yes.
Raise people's anticipation, because there's no way the show could possibly disappoint when we talk about this particular individual.
Let's build it up some more. So, what do we do for this Monday show?
Well, I think we were going to talk about movie conventions that we hate.
Nice. So, being complete contrarian a-holes. Movie conventions that we hate. And we promise we won't talk about Star Wars Blu-ray in this, this episode as well. So, alright, well, so we're talking about, like, maybe cliches or things that you always see, and, you know, I'm gonna kick us off, guys, to get the juices rolling, because this is something that's irritated me, and this is something often found in horror movies. And I think Mac and I, we've talked about this before, but, I love it when the killers are revealed, and the killer, more often than not, is a, female of slight frame. Yeah? And she ends up doing these incredible physical feats. Two of my favorite examples, and here's a couple spoiler warnings, was High Tension. Remember the French horror film?
Oh, yes.
High Tension? It was revealed that this, again, spoiler alert, this young girl who probably weighs about 55 pounds, I'd say, like Frodo weight, you know, was kind of schizophrenic and hallucinating. And at the end, she's lugging around this industrial, like, cement saw or something. And it's just attacking people's cars and cutting through the windshields and hacking people up. And, you know, I'm all for female empowerment, but that's a little stretching it for, you know, for this girl's probably, you know, 60 to 70 pounds soaking wet, hefting this gigantic industrial tool around.
That is ridiculous.
It is.
See, now this is what I like to refer to as the Scooby-Doo conceit.
Oh, interesting. We got a name for it.
It used to happen every week on Scooby-Doo. So you'd have some, you know, monster that would do these amazing things, you know, and defy the laws of physics.
Oh, yes.
That would turn out to be, you know, Mr. Librarian who couldn't possibly do it. And it's the same thing.
Why, it's Old Man Rivers, the man who ran the haunted amusement park.
Exactly.
And is incredibly brittle.
Yeah,
he's lugging his oxygen tank around with him,
and yet it still happens. And what do you think in these screenwriters in their pitches? Do they do this on purpose? Do they? Well, everybody else did it, so I can do it too. Or do we think that there's just some kind of blind spot in the annals of cinematic history that people don't realize that this is incredibly stupid?
I mean, isn't the real answer is they think we're stupid as viewers?
Yes, I think so.
I mean, because another example for me, do you guys remember during the whole Scream run of movies when you had all these movies released and that you know they're all in the same genre because there's like 10 attractive young people standing in a row on the cover of the trailer poster, on the poster, you know? But it was Urban Legend. You remember that one? Urban Legend?
Yep, sure.
Starring Rebecca Gayhart, who turned out, spoiler alert, to be the killer. And
there was one
scene where the killer had like a football player suspended from a rope, and he was like scratching on a car or something.
Right.
And Rebecca Gayhart again is, you know, about 80 pounds or so.
Yeah.
So it's just
the filmmaker's argument is quote unquote suspension of disbelief.
Ah, yes. See, that's the same suspension of disbelief.
I think it's screenwriter laziness.
Yeah. Short Round can take down these gigantic thuggy guards with his roundhouse kicks.
I think one of the problems is you can't have it be somebody you haven't introduced yet. in the story. So if there's only like five or six characters.
And everyone's going to notice the weightlifter.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like, you can't just be like, oh, in the 2-hour movie, it was this guy that we're just introducing in the last minute of the last reel. It's like, nobody would go for that. So it has,
so it
to,
has
be,
to be somebody you don't suspect, even if it defies the laws of physics.
See, and Neil Simon does that in Murder by Death, the comedy. It's, he talks about that from Truman Capote, and he gathers all these mystery writers together, and he rails on every one of the conceits that they, these crutches that they fall on. Like, yes, introducing a character at the last minute who couldn't possibly have done any of the things that you said, but that's how you paint yourself out of a corner, you know, get yourself out of a painted corner.
Yeah.
That movie is hilarious.
All right. You know, so that's my offering. You know, the other, here's another one. Remember the movie Three Ninjas? Remember that one?
Sure.
Yes.
Why are you making me remember that?
You do. You love it. They made like three sequels to that too. But that's
were the
one
sequels
one.
Called Four Ninjas? Five Ninjas? That's got, what they
like,
would do now.
You know, yeah. There was like an 8-year-old who was a ninja. You know, and I just remember he's leveling these full grown adult men. You know, like how much power does an 8-year-old pack in a roundhouse kick? I don't know.
Right, Power Kids from last year.
Power Kids, that's right.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
And another tough one to swallow.
Yeah, I'll throw out another horror convention.
Yes.
It's kind of entertaining if it's an 80s horror movie in an unintentional way, but just the fact that nearly every horror movie made has to have a scene where somebody's walking around in the dark saying, "Bill? Stop screwing around."
Yes.
Why? You know, I'm entertained by it, but does it have to be in every single movie? Every single horror movie.
And at what point do we take, I mean, I guess it's kind of gets to be a scream, it gets into that meta stuff, but at what point do we start thinking that these characters have seen horror movies and know what not to do, you know? But I guess that point never would come. And we could probably just stockpile this whole installment with horror movie cliches.
Oh, man, we could.
Yes.
All right, I'll take us out of horror movies. How's that?
Nice, do it.
The worst for me, the one that like sends me throwing stuff around my room when I watch it, is I'm gonna call it Hacking the Gibson.
Okay.
Bonus points if you know what I'm talking about. So it's from the movie Hackers.
Yes. Young Angelina Jolie.
They have to. There's a big computer system called the Gibson, and they hack it by like. Basically flying around on digital skateboards through like a 3-dimensional landscape.
Right.
Which is similar to how that girl hacked the Unix system in Jurassic Park, right?
Right, yes.
In like the 80s and maybe the 90s, I understand that computers were these like mythical things that people didn't understand yet. But today, people know how, like, every time there's a computer, people use it to solve the most ridiculous plot devices in a time frame that could never, ever, and it just drives me insane. Like, watching TV with my wife, like, she puts on, like, Bones or something, which is a fun show, until they, like, click a button and, like, a 3D floating model of something shows up, and they're like, give me a picture of the walls in that room.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
How do they get that?
Yeah, this technology is not yet available to us.
They use computers to write their way out of the silliest situations. It drives me nuts.
Yes, computers are magic.
They are magic. They are magic boxes that can solve anything.
And you have to wonder how hackers have time to hack anything in the movies when they clearly spend so much time developing their own custom UIs. They're really nice, you know.
And people sit down, they're like, I've never seen this operating system. I don't know.
Right.
Floating Windows.
Well, we've talked about this in another show, and it's a couple of my favorite movies are guilty of it. The Thing, for one. Where they can just type into a computer. How long, you know, if the thing arrives into a populated area, how long until the entire human race is,
that's right,
you know, subsumed by it? And then the computer, they just ask it by typing that in and hitting return, and then the computer answers, like, you know, whatever, 3 days or something.
There's usually a graphic of, like, red dots spreading over the
internet. This is in 5 weeks, in 10 weeks.
Something that would take like a statistician like 2 weeks to put together. It's just like, click, there it is.
Or in War Games, right, where with the high intelligent computer, assume sentience, even though it's probably running what MS DOS.
Yeah.
You know, 45K of memory installed.
At least, I mean, no, it, that, you know, it, in a way, that's almost believable because nobody even understood a computer when that movie was made. I mean, it was just like there were these magical things and they were plugged into nuclear bombs and everybody was just like, uh-oh.
I was alive in the 80s. Yeah, I remember that we were all terrified that our Commodore 64s could go sentient.
I couldn't get my Commodore 64 to play Zaxxon. I don't know what they were. Yeah.
If you did load quotations, asterisk quotations, (8, 3), you were screwed.
Well, that's like on Star Trek. How many times did Kirk convince the computer to self-destruct because it was coming up with an illogical answer?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You want the computer to self-destruct, just ask it to define love.
I am lying right now.
I will say this, though, because I've been watching Star Trek on Netflix, the original series, and I hadn't seen it in years. And so I was watching The Menagerie, which has the whole, what we were talking about before, where, you know, they took the original pilot and cut it up into a new episode, where Kirk and Spock are watching Captain Pike.
Oh, that's right.
Captain Pike's previous adventures. And I was amazed at the fact that somebody in the show, I think it was Kirk, said, you know, like, where did this footage come from? We don't shoot stuff like this, you know, and
right.
They explained that the aliens had, you know, done this. So, I mean, I kind of liked that they actually had Kirk question, how am I able to watch this like it's a TV show? This doesn't make any sense.
That's another, I mean, James Bond, the Bond movies were very guilty of this as well. I think You Only Live Twice did this, where they were looking at shots of missiles. Maybe it was Moonraker, too. I'm not sure. They're looking at shots of missiles and colliding with things, and they were just getting these great, you know, post-production edits of these things. You know, I was like, I guess they've got a whole crew up there documenting these.
We know we want to avoid the missiles because we already have done it and we filmed it.
Right, so they shoot a rocket into space, and then they shoot another rocket with a camera.
the gaffer, the best player in there. And then before that, signal gets passed down to Hugo Drax. You know, there's an editor who's cutting it all together. Yeah, you gotta make sure it looks nice. Well, speaking of Bond and therefore action movies, how about this? And we're all big fans of bad guys getting wiped out in action movies in creative ways, but an overused action movie death to me is random guy runs into like a circuit board and gets electrified.
Yeah, like what kind of power does that have to be shooting out in order to, you know, short circuit his entire nervous system?
I mean, Corey Haim blew up a vampire, remember, by hitting him with an arrow, and the guy fell back into just a shelf system, an audio system, and exploded.
Right, yeah.
Of course, they gave us a line, "Death by Stereo," which is
in Under Siege. You know, Seagal grabs Tommy Lee Jones and pushes him through the computer screen, and the sparks just go flying out of that thing. It's like how much electricity was running through that computer monitor for it to just fry Tommy Lee Jones?
No wonder these computers are turning sentient.
That's right.
A lot of poor electricians on these. Exactly. You know, I guess if you're an evil megalomaniac, you're probably putting out the electrical work to lowest bid, right? Because you can't afford it, so that's the problem, I think.
Yeah, your grid is probably third world.
That's true.
What kind of electricity is it using that it's shooting you back? Like, is it the one kind of current that just makes you sit still, or the one that blows you away?
Oh, that's true. It depends, right?
Yeah.
One keeps you in place while it electrocutes you. I've never seen 10 feet, you know.
Very rarely do you see the one that sits you sit still. But I mean, nothing. Anytime you're in any kind of industrial setting, nothing behaves the way you expect it to. Though, you guys remember Hard Target? Like
yes.
the Jean-Claude. Oh, and I don't know why I remember this like 20 years later, because there's no practical reason for me to remember this. But I remember watching this one scene where like a guy shoots an oil drum, and the oil drum takes off into the air like a rocket ship.
Of course.
Like, he just shoots it with a gun. It goes, and it just flies straight up in the air.
So instead of leaking oil. Right?
Like, whatever. I don't know. Apparently, there were, like, you know, firecrackers in it or something. It was just... It was. I mean, it looked great, but it made no sense.
That nothing in that movie makes sense. Like, counting Jean-Claude Van Damme's hair.
Oh, man. That was fantastic.
Shellacked on.
Shellacked mullet. Well, another one that drives me crazy and is in a very popular series of movies, overused in it, I think, is the 360-degree camera pan, which is, I think if you took out every 360-degree camera pan in The Lord of the Rings, the movies, the entire trilogy would be like 30 minutes long, I'm pretty sure. It's okay when it's used correctly to express some sort of disorientation, but it seems like very few movies do that anymore. It's always just for the heck of it.
Where do you think he first showed up?
Bad Boys.
You think Bad Boys?
That's the first time I remember really thinking, whoa, what are they doing?
What are they overdoing?
But, well, yeah, you said that a lot about Bad Boys, which is just, what the hell is this? But
yeah, that entire movie is a, what is happening here? What is happening to my brain? Yeah, and in Lord of the Rings, it's like Jackson does it, I guess, because the movie is about a ring. That's the only thing I can figure out. So let's just keep moving the camera around in circles.
That's very deep. I like that.
That is deep.
Because yeah. it doesn't really, like, most of the time, we're not really supposed to feel disoriented or anything. I can't figure out otherwise why he does it, but I've always found it distracting.
Well, Mac and Mike, I've got one for you guys. Comic book movie conventions that you're tied up.
The one I had in mind wasn't really for comic books. So
all right, go for it then. I mean to put you on the spot.
If I can pull the plug on that suggestion of yours somewhat rudely. my suggestion, this could be for both either horror movies or for comedies, or maybe even the occasional action movie. What I'm absolutely sick to death of in movies is the hillbillies.
Ah, yes. Good one.
Yes.
The hillbillies.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you've got the horror movies where the car breaks down and then the people in the car are terrorized by the evil hillbillies.
Right.
Or you've got the comedies where, you know, our heroes are in the middle of their crazy comedy shenanigans and then they run into a bunch of, you know, wacky, crazy hillbillies. And it's every time this happens, I just cringe. And it's like, there goes the movie every time that happens.
Well, the redneck, yeah, the hillbilly for the horror movies, the crazy hillbilly really kind of took over recently from the creepy 9-year-old Japanese girl.
Right.
As far as the icons. I mean, obviously, Chainsaw Massacre, you know, they were pretty crazy. But, yeah, there was after Wrong Turn and the 12 sequels that came after that.
Exactly.
The Hills Have Eyes and all that stuff. It was definitely a...
There's so many of them. Yeah, it's like, well, you can't afford zombie makeup, so, okay, we can't do zombies, so what can we do?
Blackout your teeth. Go for
it. Right. Let's do hillbillies. They don't need any makeup, so just talk with a funny accent.
I think, ironically, extreme inbreeding probably leads to more docile people. I don't think it makes them insane and crazy, but what do I know? So you think hillbillies are played? So played.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, anytime I see them, and in comedies too, you know, and they show up in the, they're never a comedy of bad hillbillies. It's like you get 2/3 of the way into a comedy, and then suddenly the wacky hillbilly shows up. Like, oh, damn it!
Yeah, that's the Christmas Vacation effect.
Exactly.
We had a creative wall. We had a creative wall writing this. We need to liven up this production.
And it's not a new thing either. I mean, you mentioned James Bond. Remember the and there are two Roger Moore flicks where the hillbilly sheriff shows up for a cameo.
Yeah, he's probably been talked about on this podcast a few too many times.
Because he's also totally in Superman too.
That's right. So he was almost single-handedly ruined one of the craziest stunts ever performed on film. And that was in Live and Let Die, where the Twirl-a-Whirl car jump, which is ridiculous, but it was intercut with him like somersaulting the slide.
it was a product of the times. It was the Boss Hog effect.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah, because that was like pre Smokey and the Bandit, even. So there's really, I guess it is the Boss Hog effect, because otherwise there's no excuse for it.
No, we make
I
no
can
sense
see if they it. Felt like if they just felt like, you know, we're making a James Bond movie and we need to get in on some of that Smokey and the Bandit popularity. They didn't even have that excuse because it hadn't been made yet. So I don't know.
But, and yet it continues to this day. So and it just drives me crazy every time.
Yeah, one more stab at the comic book one, real quick.
Okay,
and let's look at origin stories because that's what it seems like we get a lot of. I mean, and this is an open question, so I don't really have an answer for this, but. Conventions and like comic book origin stories that you're just getting tired of.
The instantly available, tailored suit made out of some weird fabric that nobody's ever seen before and probably sewn together by a teenager.
That's a good point. I mean, I can barely dress myself with pre-made clothes on a regular basis. Like, if I had to make a costume from scratch, I don't even know how I would do it.
Yeah, where do you go? Are you Joanne's Fabric with these things? I mean, Michael's? And
I'd just be like a toga. That's all I could do.
That's right. The Roman Avenger strikes again.
It'd be like, you know, I would probably think, well, if I went to, like, Urban Outfitters, I could probably get a pair of jeans that's, like, tight enough to look like a
that's right.
superhero.
They're going to think you're, like, a bassist for a screamo band.
Right.
Although I guess screamo is not a bad name for a comic book superhero.
There you go. Yeah.
Skinny jeans, a scarf.
That's right. You take the Spider-Man 3 hairstyle. T-shirt. That's right. Yeah. Screamo and Angst Boy are here to save you.
Yeah. In Kick-Ass, I mean, in the comic book, they explain that it's a wetsuit that he bought on the internet. But even in the movie, though, they kind of built it up to try to make it something more than that.
Yeah, there are other things, though, in those origins, too, I'm trying to think of.
The greatest origin story of all, of course, is the birth of Nuclear Man.
Yes.
Talked about at length here. I mean, is that really... it might be convention. I don't know. Like, how... This is one of my favorite parts of any movie. When they just put the piece of fabric and the DNA goop into a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
And Mark Pillow emerges out of that flame. I love that. Yeah, that's the other thing. The abuse of, like, the abuse of, you know, we say how you just chalk it up to computers, right?
Yep.
Like, chalk it up to, like, chemistry, too, or science.
Oh, sure.
You know, yeah. Science in general.
Technology is magic.
That's right. So Gene Hackman and John Cryer, we'll just trust that they're these DNA geniuses. The crap they're doing turns into Mark Pillow.
My other thing is, if you're, let's say you're from an alien world and you come here and you have all sorts of superpowers and you have super strength and everything else, so much so that your adoptive parents do not let you go out for the football team.
Yes,
they don't let you do anything but be the water boy. And everything. How is it that you develop this amazing physique? You're not really getting, you know. Nothing is heavy to you.
That's a good point. You're not really working out your muscles.
Right.
I guess push-ups,
not
right?
On the football team. Yeah, I guess you
could. Because you would be heavy. It's like an ant carrying 50 times its own weight.
I never thought of that.
That's good.
Physics. Shaking my fist.
All right. Any other? I'm sure there's plenty, obviously.
I like how everybody in every movie drives around with like 700 pounds of explosives in their car.
Of course.
When the cars explode, they just like...
Man, the 80s are the real offense. Like, we brought up Boss Hogg. That happened like daily in Dukes of Hazzard. A car would go off a cliff and it would explode in midair.
The ones in midair are my favorite.
Yeah. Yes.
The exploding cars.
It's become such a trope that like when a car behaves correctly, it's almost a letdown. Like a car goes off the cliff and you're like, wait for it, and it just bumps on the ground. You're like, oh, because you're like, you're almost waiting for it. So
why didn't it explode?
Yeah.
That and cops driving cars that cops could never afford to drive.
Oh, of course.
That's a convention I kind of like. I think it started with Starsky and Hutch, probably. But, you know, just anything where they've got either some very elaborate muscle car or... Like, who knows, an Aston Martin or something.
Right, or,
you know, some sort of supercar that would cost like $200,000, and they're just tooling around L.A. in it.
Right,
on a cop salary.
There's a long stretch of movies there where, like, everybody drove convertibles simply because it's, like, so you could see the actors' faces and stuff. No matter what their job or economic status is, it's, like, always had to be a convertible.
It's a good – car chases, that's a good – has anybody ever – is there – are there car chases where people are using, like, a Buick Regal or something, like, something really ridiculous?
This came up. Was it the filibuster or maybe another objection where, like, Mission Impossible 2? What were we talking about? Like, Mission Impossible 2 had a giant car chase at the end. It was filibuster with motorcycles.
Yeah, it was motorcycles.
But the cars were, like, they're like a Geo Prism and a, you know, a Ford Contour. You know, so it's like the props guys just kind of ran out of money. So they were using these vehicles. Exactly what you're thinking, Adam, that they got at like the Kia dealership at the pre-owned lot. They're certified pre-owned, so yeah. No.
Yeah, I mean, that's a rare, other than that, like maybe the Blues Brothers.
That's true.
Normal.
I think I must have overlooked that moment in Mission Impossible 2, which would have been the only practical moment in the whole film.
Yeah, that's the whole. Yeah. You can overlook that whole film if you want, really.
I was thinking about it.
Blocked it out.
They were talking overused convention in that movie, was the rubber face masks, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's you expect that from Mission Impossible. That's like the signature of that whole
that's
franchise.
That's true. Although they went overboard in the second one. They actually toned it down in the third one, but the second one, like, everybody. I mean, everybody was wearing a rubber mask in that movie. Yeah. Like John Woo himself was, too.
And there were doves everywhere.
How about giant explosions catapulting people in the air and they're okay when they get up?
All right, yes, because the explosion threw them from the from the area of danger. Yeah.
That's right. So, ironically, the explosion saved their lives.
Saved them, yes. It's like people getting shot and flying like 30 feet.
Of course, that convention that I know Roger Ebert always whines and complains about is the people running down a hallway as the fireball chases them from behind.
Yes.
That is fantastic.
They manage to outrun it, too, most of the time.
Right, yeah. Yeah, they outrun every time. Usually they jump out the window just before the fire like shoots out the window behind them. Yeah.
That could probably be referred to as like the Millennium Falcon conundrum.
That's true.
Curling out just ahead of the fireball. Excellent.
Nice. Well, not bad for just kind of spitballing these. Any last ones before we close down this star-studded edition?
I'm sure. Well, I will say, you know, we promised not to bring up the Star Wars Blu-ray.
All right, let's do it anyway.
But yeah, I won't go there. But because there are so many other places you can go with this convention. But what kind of started this whole conversation was the looking to the sky and yelling no.
Yeah, of course. That's
shot.
Right.
You know, and how often that is, it's used amazingly often in movies. I can't believe how often it shows up. It's in Iron Man 2. It's, I'm trying to think, I saw it somewhere else recently too. It's all the time, and you would think directors would be like, no, I can't do that. That's just ridiculous.
It's supposed to be like an old school Hollywood thing. Like, you know, it's supposed to date back to the 30s and from the old, you know, when they were still learning filmmaking from the theatrical times. And I can kind of see that, but then, like you said, you look at Iron Man and stuff, Thor is another one, where you can still see it over and over and over in a lot of today's modern movies.
Yeah. It's actually mispronounced. They're all shouting Khan.
Of course. Well, that makes it okay.
Yeah. Does Shatner look up in the air and scream that, or is he screaming it out the view screen?
He's screaming it into his communicator.
Oh, into his communicator.
Because he's trapped. Yeah. On whatever planet that is, SETI Alpha 4 or whatever, buried alive. Oh, man. Now I got to go watch that. Thank you.
Oh, nice. Oh, there you go. Well.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
That and Hard Target.
Oh, no, you don't.
That's a double feature.
I do own Hard Target because it's part of that...
The Sudden Death collection.
Sudden Death 4-pack.
The only place you can get it in widescreen.
Tell you, man, right at the end of the movie, check out the oil barrel. It's like it's on a string and it shoots up in the sky. Fantastic.
All right, well, I think we lost Mike Staley somewhere in this, so.
He may just be stunned.
Yeah. He's the casualty of this. So I think we'll wrap that up. So Adam, Mac, and Mike for a brief while. Thanks for the last minute jump on. We thought we'd seize the opportunity to get as many different voices on here as possible.
Sure thing.
And I guess, Dan, there's really nothing else to say except...
Thanks, 10 points easy.